It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. We are rolling. The NFL draft is now officially here in less than a month. Absolutely crazy. Speaking of crazy, we will let you in on the big announcement that we've been hinting at on Twitter and in emails and on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast a little bit later. We will also announce this week's Reality Sports Online winner and contestant a little bit later. But we've got our guest waiting on the line. So before we talk to him, Evan, it's your buddy Kevin Cole. Why are we having Kevin on again? I mean, you must really love a guy to have him on a second time.
Yeah, I mean, he's super, super smart. He's been tearing it up this offseason with the content that he's been putting out. I mean, if you're into fantasy football, like trying to get an edge in fantasy football, make sure that you are following at @Cole_Kev. Kevin Cole does an incredible job. Like you said, we had him on last year. He's a big analytics guy, and I've discussed this before, but analytics is not like something that should bother people. That term bothers some people, and it really shouldn't. It's just looking for trends in data. And, you know, in fantasy, we're trying to look at trends and then find ways that we can gain an edge. And that's what Kevin Cole has spent the entire offseason doing, and he's done some fabulous work. If you go to his Twitter page, you can look at – he has his author links at both RotoViz and PFF Fantasy, and you can read all his stuff. But let's bring him on.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do it.
Big Eater of the Week.
Well, as promised, very excited for this week's guest. And unlike a couple guests we've had recently, you've actually heard this voice before. His name is Kevin Cole, does an awesome, awesome job at both RotoViz and I think more recently, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, for Pro Football Focus. Last year, we mainly talked MFL 10s with him. Today, you're going to talk a little bit more about wide receivers and the formula and strategies he's come up with there. His Twitter handle is @Cole_Kev. Kevin, it's Ross. It's Evan. Thanks for coming aboard again.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, man. Well, Evan is chomping at the bit to ask you about a million questions. So I've found I learn more when I just step aside for a while and then come up with a question or two at the end. But I know if Evan has a lot to ask you, then I've got a lot I need to hear and listen to. So I'll let Evan have at you.
Well, yeah, I don't think that anybody has been working as hard this offseason in the fantasy industry community as Kevin Cole. So, kudos to that. So, Kevin, you developed a wide receiver projection system from college to pro. Using just a few simple data points, and I'm interested to hear you kind of discuss how you put that system together, and eventually we'll talk about some specific players, but what were the main data points that you were looking for, and how did you feel about it when you were done putting it together?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds too much on this, but what I did was I wanted to figure out, using kind of some simple programming, whether or not you could take some of the college, not only the statistics, but the combine measurables, age, things like that, that others have found to be statistically significant, and kind of put them all into a formula, whittle it down, figure out what the most important variables are, and then project whether or not someone's going to be successful in the NFL. Now, the bar that I was setting for whether someone would be successful or not, at least from a fantasy football perspective, and especially a dynasty football perspective, for wide receivers, whether or not they'd have a top 24 finish within the first 3 years of their career. I mean, some guys obviously blossom a little bit later in their careers, but it's probably not as valuable to someone who's making a rookie pick right at this point. They're going to want someone who's going to return value fairly quickly. So I looked at all these different measures. Now, some of the unique measures that I looked at that you might not see at places with just kind of your raw statistical totals, and the biggest one is market share. Now, this is a concept that we've talked about on RotoViz quite a bit. I think some others have picked up on it. And the passing games throughout the college landscape are so varied that looking at just the yards receiving or the touchdowns, things like that, sometimes it can be a bit misleading. If you're in a very high-powered attack, someone might have 1,000 yards receiving. But if overall the team is passing for, you know, 4,000, 5,000 yards, it's not quite as impressive as someone who has near that amount, but a team that is not throwing nearly as often as maybe only throwing for 2,500 or 3,000 yards. So market share was the big thing that I found with wide receivers, and in particular looking at their market share or their share of receiving yards over their entire career when they've played is very important, because it not only shows how well they've done at the end of their career, but it also shows throughout their career when they were young and they were developing. If they were able to get on the field and they were able to produce a bit earlier, it shows that they can really translate that into the NFL and separate themselves. So the variables that I found to be the most significant were the age when they're drafted. So we kind of talked about that before, the younger being better. Their career market share of receiving yards. I also found that their receptions per game, which kind of goes into the concept of, would also be analogous to their yards per reception. So it's going to find someone who stretches the field a bit more as being more valuable in the NFL. Someone who's able to make big plays in the college landscape is almost a must. And then also their touchdowns per game, and touchdowns being a pretty big part of being able to translate the game to the NFL also. And then it comes up with a score that's trying to predict the likelihood that someone will have one of those top 24 seasons. So I used it against all the receivers that were drafted and played in the NFL between 2000 and 2015. I tested it against it, and it worked pretty well. It was pretty close to draft position if you're going to look at whether or not someone's been successful. And this doesn't even account for that, which is probably the most important thing. So I came up with some results, and you'll see guys at the top of the list historically like Larry Fitzgerald and Calvin Johnson. And then you'll see a few guys here in 2016 also near the top of the list. Some of them are on the top of the draft boards, but some of them aren't. And I think that's why it's interesting.
Yeah, and I went through all of your results because you had them posted there on Pro Football Focus Fantasy. And I noticed some busts that it exposed, like Donnie Avery, Sonoris Moss, Tavon Austin. Pretty good stuff. And up toward the top, I mean, you know, with the exception of some guys that had off-field issues, it was pretty darn predictive, of good NFL wide receivers. So let's talk about some specifics that the model likes. Leonte Carew. How do you feel about Leonte Carew? I mean, he seems like a really high floor player.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about Carew is he looks really good from these market share perspectives, because even early in his career, he didn't play much as a freshman, so he's not penalized there, where some others might have been penalized for getting on the field and not playing. But when he's had the chance to play, he's been awesome. Now, he only played 8 games last year, so I think there are some other metrics out there that look at total raw production that don't have him as high as I do. But if you're going to look at when he has been playing, he accounted for over 35% of receiving yards throughout his entire career. He averaged 1.3 touchdowns per game last year, and that was in a passing attack that wasn't that prolific either overall. So, and he only averaged about 5 receptions a game, so he was really stretching the field, averaging about 20 yards per reception. But this is a tool, you know, I'm not going to say that this is a certainty, but he comes out with a score of around 0.71, meaning, you know, based on this formula, you'd assume he had about a 70% chance of having that top 24 season in the first 3 years. But I think it's also important to put these things into context and say, you know, he did miss some time, so I would be a little bit more comfortable with this projection if he had played a full, you know, 13, 14 games and put up these same stats.
Yeah, and we should be clear about what does market share mean, because some people might not know that are listening to that. So why don't you kind of just describe what that is quickly?
Sure. So for everyone, for the receiving and for touchdown market share, you're basically taking their total for the season when they've played, and you're dividing that by the total receiving yards and the total touchdowns for the team. So for Carew, like I mentioned, over his career, he's getting 35% of the receiving yards, so his receiving yards when he's played divided by the total team's receiving yards, and that kind of puts everyone on a level playing field. And kind of how I mentioned earlier, I think in the NFL it's not quite as valuable because the passing games aren't as varied as you see in the college landscape. And also, you're looking for someone with a particular share because they're going to make a transition from what could be a high-flying offense in college to you know, something like the Buffalo Bills or someplace that doesn't throw as much in the pros. So you're going to want to know what sort of share they have because that's going to apply better for that transition than looking purely at the raw totals. Another guy that we'll probably talk about is Laquon Treadwell. I mean, he had pretty good pure totals, but then he was a little bit on the lower side in market share because of the fact that he was in a more prolific passing game.
And so what market share can kind of indicate is, you know, numerous things. You know, the opponent knows that this dude is going to get the ball, but yet he continues to dominate. It also indicates, you know, who of the coaches in practice identified as the player that they want to scheme the offense around. You know, this dude is clearly better than his peers. And it also indicates, you know, who is the quarterback going to select to throw the ball to, you know, when in doubt, et cetera. So it's a pretty darn good stat that RotoViz has done a great job of popularizing. So Corey Coleman, Kevin, is a dude that when I saw him play, I mean, he's the most explosive wide receiver in the class, bar none. He's got some Odell Beckham to him. How did your projection model like Corey Coleman?
Yeah, I mean, it likes Coleman quite a bit also. I mean, he's right up there. And like I mentioned earlier with Carew, you know, Carew had a smaller slate of games because of injury. So Coleman has that full season. He has the career market share is a bit lower at 26%, but he came on in his senior year. He's a bit younger. When he's going to get right around mid-year this year, he'll be 22 years old, which is not the youngest. I think we saw some guys like Amari Cooper last year who were even younger, but pretty young for that age. I mean, for being drafted, he was an underclassman, so it likes that also. And then as far as touchdowns per game, I mean, 1.7 touchdowns per game, which is really great within, you know, any offense, but in particular within that offense. So I think Coleman's a guy. Maybe because he's a little bit on the smaller side, maybe because he didn't run the most complex route tree that some others are questioning him a bit. But I think when you look at not only what I've done, but also at Football Outsiders, they have a playmaker score where Coleman's at the top, scoring higher than Amari Cooper last year. I think he's a guy that there might be a little bit of a divide between film watchers and numbers guys. I mean, film watchers do love him also, but the numbers really point to him being not only, you know, potentially the top prospect this year, but a really historically great prospect.
Yeah, I think the film watchers tend to get a little caught up in his drops too. He has some, like, you know, drops that stick out in your mind.
Yeah. I think the same thing's probably happened with Will Fuller, who's next.
Will Fuller, yeah. All right. So I was looking through. You know, you mentioned Laquon Treadwell. Josh Doctson also did not get that high of a score, but he's old. So, you know, is it mainly the age that's working against him, or, you know, why does the model not like him that much?
Yeah, it's mostly age. I mean, his career market share isn't that bad. But older prospects, I think what it's doing is they're working in conjunction with each other. So, you know, your market share over the course of your career is probably going to look better if you're an older prospect because of the fact that, I mean, you're playing through your senior year, so you're going to get a higher and higher share every year, and that's going to boost up that number. So that number is being discounted by the fact that mid-year this year is going to be 23 and a half years old, and that's really old for a prospect, especially a top prospect. And, you know, explaining it is sometimes difficult, but I think there are some intuitive aspects of it. I mean, obviously, if you're going against players who are much younger than you, you have more experience, you know how to run routes better, you may be a little bit more physical than some of these other guys that haven't developed as much when you're out there. So he really gets discounted because of that. I mean, that said, he has great numbers, and he still has a decent chance of success. We have it at 23% here, so it's not on the same level as the others. It's still decent, but age is really what's holding him down.
So it seemed like the model is really down on Michael Thomas. Is he a guy that you're thinking like may have some bust risk, or what do you think about Michael Thomas from Ohio State? We should clarify.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where his career market share is fairly low. He's a little bit on the older side. He didn't score much in the touchdown department. Although, you know, you have to use all of the tools and all the analysis available to you. And I think he profiles physically as someone who can score touchdowns. And we've seen in the past, in particular, a guy like Allen Robinson didn't score a lot of touchdowns when he was in college, but he's been a beast in the end zone in the pros. So maybe we shouldn't hold that against him necessarily. But I think it's just really, why doesn't he have a bigger share of receiving yards? I think earlier in his career, you know, he was competing with Devin Smith, so that might have hurt him. So that's a possibility for why he's not that high. But even last year, it didn't really jump up to the level that you would have liked to have seen from a top prospect. So, yeah, it's one of those things where if you say, you know, he looks great on film, he looks good physically, but really it's all about production. And I think with the wide receiver position, what you find as opposed to with running backs in particular is sometimes production can really be all you need because these guys are actually competing against each other to get the ball. And I think talent kind of flows through to the stat sheet a little bit more at the wide receiver position than it does at running back, where there's really one guy you put in the game and hand him the ball.
Where do you stand on Braxton Miller? Because, you know, he's a quarterback conversion and his production isn't great. He's old. You know, my guess is, I didn't look him up specifically in your system, but my guess is that it would hate him.
Yeah, it doesn't like him much at all. I mean, it has a 4% chance on here. Now, my system does not incorporate rushing production, and obviously he had a lot of that earlier in his career. Some others do, and I still don't think it's enough to really boost him up. I think what we've seen is, you mentioned, you know, someone like Tavon Austin, although he came on last year, he was kind of a bust from the perspective of how much draft capital was spent on him. Maybe someone like Cordero Patterson. You look at these guys who, it's okay if they're a dual threat type. I think that can work in the NFL. But you have to have at least a baseline of receiving production to translate over into the next level, because it's really a skill, that sort of baseline production. Whereas we've seen guys at the running back position where you can plug them in and they can do well. I mean, Carlos Williams was a defensive back that converted over. C.J. Process this year, he's another converted, you know, wide receiver prospect. David Johnson, who was maybe the best running back down the stretch in the entire NFL, was a wide receiver was a guy that they tried to make a wide receiver. So I think in the wide receiver position, when you look at someone like Braxton Miller, you're just really going to be counting a lot on the fact that he has this athleticism that's going to be transcendent. But if you look at what he did at the combine, which doesn't factor into my model, but if you look at what he did at the combine, it doesn't really put him in the top tier, even athletically. I mean, he was good, but he wasn't, you know, phenomenal.
And where do you stand on Tyler Boyd? Because he seems like a guy that some people love and other people really don't like. And, you know, I mean, the truth obviously is somewhere in the middle, but where do you stand on him?
Yeah, I mean, if you look directly at the production, I think the model does a decent job of encapsulating where he should fall. I mean, he's decent on age, so he's about 21 and a half years old, so he's not that old. He has really an amazing market share over his career. I mean, over his entire career, so not just his last year, it was over 40%. Now, someone is really an elite college receiver, if they, even for one season, they can get over 40%. So he was over 40% for his entire career. But the other two variables that come into the model point to what people see on tape and what the combine told us, and that is he's averaging a lot of receptions per game, so he's not necessarily doing it in the most efficient manner. His yards per reception, I think, was a little bit over 10 this last season, so he's not stretching the field, and he's not scoring a lot of touchdowns, only half a touchdown per game. So I think that kind of fits in with what some tape evaluators are seeing, is that, you know, he's going to be a slot guy. He ran over, I mean, it was over a 4.5 at less than 200 pounds, so not very impressive physically, and that comes through in his production number. So I have him being at a 43% chance of success, which is still pretty good. He can maybe fill a decent role. He's probably a little bit more athletic Jarvis Landry type, but it doesn't see him as being a potential home run hitter like a Coleman or a Carew.
And last question. Kevin, I would just like to listen to you discuss the significance of age, because, you know, it's a data point that is discussed a lot in regard to other sports. Like you hear people talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo's age in the NBA. I'm sure I just butchered his name. You hear, you know, people talk about it in MLB. You know, a dude that bats 320 at AAA at age 19 is viewed much differently than a guy who hit 320 at age 28 at AAA. You know, it's discussed in other sports, but it's not discussed in the NFL. What are your feelings on the significance of age as it relates to prospects?
Well, I think it's extremely significant. And one of the reasons that it is so significant is exactly what you said, that it's not being accounted for. So I mentioned earlier that these projections don't account for, you know, draft position. They don't account for that. And that is obviously going to encapsulate the NFL's, at least that particular team's, total opinion of a prospect. So when you can find a variable like age that isn't being as heavily weighted into NFL evaluation, I think that's when you can kind of separate yourself and find some guys who may be lower draft prospects who are very young and who should be moved up, or the exact opposite, like we talked about with someone like Josh Doctson, who's going to go very early but is very old. And, I mean, this is just a little bit of an anecdote, but I remember seeing within the last year there was a big discussion about Kevin White when he was being drafted, and last year how old he was. I think what ended up happening was the Bears, actually on their official website, and they even tweeted something out with the wrong age, so saying that he was younger than he actually was, and it was corrected and confirmed. So it's a possibility that these teams don't even put that into their equation. I think they may be relying a little bit more on whether or not someone is an upperclassman or someone's a senior or a junior, but there can be quite a very difference between that. And if you, like I said, the difference between someone like Amari Cooper last year, who was 21 years old coming out, and Josh Doctson, who's going to be almost 24 years old. I mean, that's a tremendous difference for, especially in that part of someone's playing career. If you look at how much someone's going to mature and get better between the age of, let's say, 20 and 25.
Really good stuff, Kevin. And I think, you know, I've seen people talk a little bit in the NFL about age. You know, they'll mark a guy, not that it's a red flag, but if he's 23, he's considered an overaged prospect. I don't know that 22 is something that they mark, but 23 is definitely overaged prospect. And then if a guy's 20 or something, they definitely take that into account as well. And it's both a positive in terms of growth, but also there's always some, you know, do some more research to make sure he'll be mature enough to handle the pro game. But I don't know that they look at it as closely as you do, which is great. Was there anything else from last year's season? I know we talked to you last year about MFL 10s. I know I haven't hit yet mainly on wide receivers, but before we let everybody go, I just ask him one big takeaway from the 2016 season or 2015 season that you will kind of keep in mind when you're making any of your drafts in any of your leagues in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest takeaway, and anyone who played fantasy football last year definitely noticed this, was kind of the complete implosion of the early round running backs, of the stud running backs last year. I did some analysis earlier in the year at Pro Football Focus, basically just looking at how many top finishes, I looked at top five or top 10 weekly finishes you saw for those top backs in contrast to what we've seen the last number of years. And it's almost a flat line as compared to in the past, meaning that you had guys like Devontae Freeman, who were drafted much later, that were putting up the best numbers. You had D'Angelo Williams, who was, you know, one of the leaders in top five performances. And then you had, you know, Le'Veon Bell and Jamaal Charles and Arian Foster and some of the top guys in the league go down to injury. So I think that was the biggest takeaway last year, and specifically in MFL 10. I mean, I was someone advocating drafting those running backs early, so that led to poor results. But I think what you have to do is you have to sit back, maybe not overreact to what had happened in one particular year. And I think it's probably analogous to, you know, investing in the stock market or something like that. You know, you know what the historical trends are. You have to look at one year, put it into context, and realize that if you continue to go with the historical trends, and which of these MFL 10s, that's, you know, making sure you have some exposure to those early running backs, I think you're going to benefit this year. And there should be some regression back to having, you know, better performances from those top guys.
It is absolutely insane that this guy doesn't have more followers on Twitter. I got to be honest with you guys. He's at @Cole_Kev. He's the lead writer now for @ProFootballFocusFantasy. He still edits and contributes over at RotoViz. He's also the co-host of the Numbers Game Pod. And as you can tell, takes a very, very metric, analytic-based approach to things, which, as you guys know, I really appreciate, even though I guess I'm a quote-unquote film watcher. Kev, great stuff again, man.
Okay, thanks, Ralph.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, thanks, Evan.
That guy was money. 2 years in a row, blown away by his data analysis. He's probably the type of guy that cleans up at DraftKings.com, because I think those are the guys that clean up a lot at DraftKings.com. You can do it for anything. NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, which is starting soon. Speaking of starting soon, golf's first major is right around the corner. And it's a tradition unlike any other. In Augusta, Georgia, you are going to love it. And my suggestion is to master playing golf at DraftKings.com now before that tournament gets underway. You just pick six golfers before tee off, stand under the salary cap, and make watching golf even more interesting than it already may be for a lot of you. And if it's not interesting at all, make it interesting. Fantasy golf contests begin when tournaments tee off. So get to DraftKings.com and choose your golfers. Use the promo code FEAST and play for free. That's right. That's the code Evan uses. FEAST to play for free now only at DraftKings.com. Again, that's DraftKings.com. Play for free.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
Well, we don't actually have a question for Evan or I today, but as I mentioned earlier, we're going to let you know, contestant number four, come on down on the RSO, Reality Sports Online League, to go against Evan and myself. His name is Dante, I'm going to say Odorizio, I don't know, O-D-O-R. Odor Izio. I'm going to go with Odorizio rather than Odor Izio. Anyway, here's the email, Evan. He sent multiple sponsor confirmations. Again, there are some diehards that really want in this bad boy. Multiple sponsor confirmations. I sent these flowers to my family back home in Pittsburgh. Last year, I moved to NYC. I came here at age 24 by myself to work in a teaching program. People tell me that it was like Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds. The long and short of it is I decided teaching wasn't for me. Intense but valuable experience. Well worth it, as I met and fell in love with a wonderful teacher from Brooklyn. Her name is Fanny. Well, good for you, Dante. She and I are about to do a year of long distance as I move back to Pittsburgh for a great job. And she stays for another year to finish her master's here in NYC. I would love for you to give a shout out to Fanny on the podcast. Well, two things, Dante. Number one, shout out to Fanny. My wife and I did long distance, and you can do it. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, and those weekends will be very fun. That's number one. Number two, has anything to do, Dante, with your girlfriend, but I'm a big fan of Fanny's in general, if you catch my drift. Anyway, she knows that I'm a big fan, and she's now a football head after dating me. Maybe she and I could co-own an RSO team. Dante, you and Fanny can co-own an RSO team long distance. Absolutely. That will be fantastic. Loving these diehards, Evan. How about these diehards that I think that they really want to beat you than more than beat me, would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be difficult. You know, I went undefeated in the Feast League last year, in the regular season at least. And, so I'm hanging my hat on that.
Speaking of diehards, a bunch of you probably already heard this on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. But the big announcement is that we have launched a new website, tuckheads.com. For those of you like Evan that have the sickness, the disease, we want to hear from you. We want to interact with you on a daily basis. And we want you guys to have the chance to interact with each other. Tuckheads.com. You will absolutely love it. I'll talk even more about it on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. And check your email if you're signed up over at rostucker.com to get the emails for a little bit more information. But the bottom line is we decided to do this based on feedback from you guys about wanting your own community, your own group. So now you have it. Go check it out, tuckheads.com. And since Evan does have the disease and the sickness, I will make sure that he is contribute and is a vibrant member of the community as well. Other than that, stick a fork in us. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
I did it. I finally did it. I got a new car. I've been talking to you guys about it for a while. I got a new car. I needed one. My other one died. I got a new Denali. And I used TrueCar because why wouldn't I? I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for months now, and it's just a better experience. I mean, you're able to lock in the savings with a dealer on the website. They've got a huge certified dealer network. So if you're not sure how it works, you just go to the TrueCar website or you use the TrueCar app, and they've got this bell curve. It's a pricing curve that shows you exactly what that vehicle you want is going for in your local market. And then you can actually online connect with a TrueCar local certified dealer of your choosing, and you lock in the savings off the MSRP. You just go in, you hand them the certificate that you printed out off your computer, and boom, you're good to go. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.